And welcome to another edition of Odyssey. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. We talk about ancient mysteries and modern mysteries all across the globe. So today we're going to talk about a mystical site right here in the United States, Mount Shasta, also known as Magic Mountain. And I've brought on a guest who's done a lot of research about a prospector or gold miner engineer named J.C. Brown, who stumbled upon some lost treasure from an ancient civilization on Mount Shasta. So welcome to the show, Stephen Sindoni.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
Great. So everybody just sit back, relax. We're going to have a fun journey through a real-life mystery today, and I think everybody loves a mystery. So go ahead and tell me how you... tell me a bit about Mount Shasta, how it got its mystical reputation.
Well, Mount Shasta is supposed to be the most holiest mountain in the United States. It's the site of the earliest man's civilization known as the Lemurian culture, and it's a volcano that's stands over 14,000 feet high, and is in myth and legend stated that part of California, Nevada, and a couple other states were part of Lemuria that had not sunk into the Atlantic over 12,000 years ago. And these people of this continent went into the bowels of Mount Shasta to live and are currently living there. And this is has come from the Shasta Indians and the natives of that area, that this is the history of North American continent.
Okay, so the legend of J.C. Brown is quite an esoteric mystery. I know about it because that's what I deal with on my show, and I was really intrigued that you came forward with this research. So why don't you tell me the basic story of J.C. Brown? I know he was an engineer, correct?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about his life.
Okay, well, the legend of J.C. Brown basically is in 1904, a prospector, J.C. Brown, claimed he made an intriguing discovery in the Cascade Mountain Range of California. Brown claimed that he was hired by the Lord Cowdray Mining Company of England to prospect for gold in these areas. He was looking for precious metals, and while he was there, he ran into a section of rock in the face of a cliff in Mount Shasta, which didn't seem to match the surrounding formation. So upon examining further, he noticed that it blocked an entrance to what appeared to be a cave. J.C. Brown, he was a geologist by trade, went through the entire scene, and then upon further digging, he found there was a cave full of debris with vegetation. As he kept digging, he found out that it wasn't a small cave at all, but he found that there was the cave was hiding a tunnel. So once he discovered the tunnel, he went through the tunnel, and he found the tunnel curved downward into the mountain.
He was alone, correct?
He was, well, in the legend he says he was alone, but in my research I found that he was not alone at all.
Okay.
At that point, he went down with miner's paraphernalia, and he set out to explore the tunnel. He said after 3 miles of going downward into the tunnel, he discovered a cross-section containing gold-bearing ore. When he noticed that, he believed that the ore had been previously mined by an early civilization.
Uh-huh.
So he struck gold and ore there. He believed that there were other cross-sections there that outcropped on some of the parts of the mountain, so he kept looking. He then went down another 8 miles into the mountain, so now he was about 11 miles inside the mountain when he found what he called the village.
Okay.
Here is where it gets interesting. J.C. Brown claimed that he found two rooms filled with copper and gold tablets.
Wow.
And about three by 4 inches in concave, and they lay inside of one another. So they look like very ancient tablets.
What type of writing?
Well, they were hieroglyphics. What he found that there were hieroglyphics on and drawings on these artifacts that he had found that he had never seen before, but he also found there were tempered copper spears and objects made of gold, and the walls were lined with copper, and hung on the walls were strange piercings made of gold. So what he found is, in his description of it, seemed like it was similar to what you would find in Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Sure.
Upon further, investigation, he opened up some other rooms that went into other chambers, and one of which that he went into looked like a place of worship. What he found was 13 statues that were made of copper and gold, and it was a large sun designed from what looked like protruded gold streamers. The way the objects were strewn about the room, he had the feeling that the occupants of the underground village must have left on the spur of the moment when he arrived there. So it looked like someone had been there before. So much, you know, for being alone, he realized that he wasn't alone at that point.
You mean recently? Like they had heard him coming?
Yes, because when he came into this place, he called it the village. Mm-hmm. He said there were streets there. So
wow.
When he went 11 miles down, he saw a little community. It looked like a little village, and they were like round homes. And but the one structure he went into opened to other chambers, and that's where he found the things I had mentioned. As he went further, what he found it was a real macabre scene. He came across a room, well, that had 27 skeletons in it, and the smallest skeleton of which was 6.5 feet tall, and the largest one being 10 feet tall.
Amazing. Now, this is, once again, 11 miles below Mount Shasta.
This is correct.
Okay.
Two of the bodies that he found were mummified. And what was interesting to him that is each of the figures were clad in colorful, ornate robes. So I guess he believed that this was like the king and queen of this civilization.
Sure. What kind of illumination was down there in the city?
What kind of what?
Illumination.
Illumination, as far as lighting?
Right.
He did not say.
Okay.
He did not say. What he did find, other than that, as I said, you know, the king and queens, and he found the remnants of these large people. And so what he decided to do was to leave the tunnel intact, just the way he found it, cleverly conceal it, and mark it on his map, and return at a later date.
Right. Was the mummification something similar to Egypt?
Exactly. That is what he claimed.
Interesting connection there.
Now, he spent the next 3 decades, you know, studying the Lemurian culture very extensively because of what he found. He believed that what he had discovered was remnants of the lost continent of Mu and the lost Lemurian civilization, which was pretty much prehistoric lore that the continent might have been. But years of study convinced him, between the hieroglyphics and the pictographs that he had found in the tunnel, that he was convinced that he had found the Lemurian race.
Did he take anything with him, take anything back?
Yes, he did. He claimed that he had photographs and papers from his discovery, and he claimed that he had them in a bank, a Texas bank.
Okay.
And in my research, I was able to find the Texas bank where these items were located.
And they were still there? Or?
No, I just was able to determine what bank he was referring to in the legend.
Okay, I see.
Once I was able to determine who the man was, I was able to track his journey up to Mount Shasta. And then at that point, I was able to figure out what bank he used to keep this information secret. And because he had a vault, he claimed... In the original 1934 newspaper article, which I'll go into a little further afterwards, in 1934, he claimed that he had these papers and these items in a bank in Texas.
I see. Now, this was 1904 with the original trip down there?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then 1907 he went back?
Well, he went back in 1907. But what happens is he shows up in... 1934,
mm-hmm.
to the office of the Stockton Record newspaper, and he goes to see the editor of the newspaper, and he tells the editor the story that I've just told, that he discovered this in 1904, prospecting up in Mount Shasta. So at that time, he enlists the editor, and the editor, after hearing his story, gets him involved, meeting Harry Noyce Pratt, who was the Hagen Museum curator at the time in the Stockton Museum.
The legitimate people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So after then hearing his story, the museum curator, Harry Noyce Pratt, grills him repeatedly about his claims, and he believes in his claims wholeheartedly. So they then enlist a man by the name of John C. Root, who was a retired printer at the time, who agreed to have meetings held at his home to put together an expedition. And what J.C. Brown wanted, he wanted to get 80 people to go up to Mount Shasta at his expense to claim the lost treasure of the Lemurian people, and he wanted these 80 people to catalog all the items. He wanted to keep the room that I had mentioned about the king and queen, the mummified, intact, and that the other areas they could split apart and people could make money on some of the artifacts and gold that he found.
But he wasn't there to make money, correct? He wasn't charging them.
Okay. What J.C. Brown claimed in a legend, this is what the key to putting this all together, Michael, was. So he claimed that they were going to go on an expedition up to Mount Shasta at his expense, and he would provide a boat for them all to go from the Stockton Harbor up to Mount Shasta, and from there they would go up to Mount Shasta, and it was all going to be at his expense. He claimed to be worth $40 million, so money was not an object for J.C. Brown.
And back then, that was like $40 billion, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So what I had to do, I had to find an individual who was worth that kind of money before I could even, make the claim that I figured out who J.C. Brown really was.
Sure.
So now, after the 6 weeks of
meetings
at John C. Root's home, They are supposed to now go up to Mount Shasta. So the day that they're supposed to go there, J.C. Brown disappears.
Yep. He's gone.
80 people are waiting. And keep in mind, they've got scientists, they've got doctors, lawyers, responsible, respectable people from the town of Stockton, listening to this man for 6 weeks, believing that he's going to take them to the treasure. So after waiting about 12 hours, they decided to call in the Stockton police.
Okay.
So now the Stockton police are called in, and they were duped. They could not figure out what J.C. Brown's game was. Was he
right.
a con
what's,
man?
What's the angle? Sure.
What's the angle? They said, did he take anything from anyone? Well, he didn't take a dime from anyone, so there was no crime committed.
No.
They could find no body. So they had to just dismiss it as a missing persons case. And it's remained a mystery ever since.
Did he leave them with directions to this cave?
No, he did not.
Okay. Is there any record in the Stockton newspapers of all of this?
Yes, matter of fact, there is. And this is where the story gets interesting, because once I read this on Google, I contacted the Stockton newspaper and spoke to Michael Fitzgerald, and he is a columnist for the Record. I told them I would like to solve the 1934 case of J.C. Brown. So he got me the original copy of the newspaper article in 1934. And the article pretty much verbatim told me that all the clues that I've got were pretty much legitimate clues. In the 1934 article, I was able to acquire 8 clues into the identity of the real J.C. Brown.
Okay, because that's the next step, right?
Yes.
To find out who this person actually was.
Right. So what I then did, I was looking for a screenplay to write at the time, and I decided I was going to take 2 weeks at the New York Public Library and research the 8 clues that I found on J.C. Brown.
Okay.
What I learned within the first 3 or 4 days of researching the 8 clues is that I had discovered who the real identity of J.C. Brown was.
Already, huh?
Yes.
Okay, who is that?
Well, his real name is J.B. Body. Now, J.B. Body, which was interesting, was around the same age as the man, J.C. Brown, when he appeared in 1934 in Stockton, California. J.B. Body was worth over $40 million as well.
I see.
The reason I was able to track J.B. Body was because in the legend he claimed that in 1904 was the first time he went up to Mount Shasta, but he claimed that he didn't find it until 1907 on his second trip up there. Well, our country is very good when it comes to border crossings and records. When I was able to determine that it was J.B. Body, I learned that the man was not an American. So that's one of the reasons why the legend was still a legend, because the man was really someone who was from England and a British subject who was living in Mexico.
Okay.
But the main clue which tied him in there was, in the legend, he claimed he worked for the Lord Cowdray Mining Company. So when I Googled the Lord Cowjay Mining Company, not only did the company exist, I found that the owner of the company was a man by the name of Sir Wheatman Pearson. Now, Pearson is a company that's still in existence today.
Really?
Yes. And the interesting thing is when I looked at, when I got the records of the border crossings in 1904, J.B. Body, who was, you know, J.C. Brown, a legend, came over the border in Laredo, Texas border from Mexico with his boss, Lord Cowdrey, or Sir Wheatman Pearson. But they brought in with them W.E. Sayre, who was a mining engineer, and Robert Adams, who was a civil engineer. So that coincided with his story of coming in the first time in 1904. What nailed it for me is in 1907, he comes back in. This is J.B. Body with John Gilmartin, his valet, C.M. Yeomans, who was a civil engineer from South Africa, Fred Kleisner, one of his civil engineers, who was from Germany and Austrian, and John McLaughlin, who was also a Scottishman. And all these engineers were working for the Lord Cowdrey Company in Mexico under J.B. Body. J.B. Body was a lieutenant for Sir Wheatman Pearson. So here is a man who has these engineers working for him, and under his boss's direction, allowed them to go, come into the country from Mexico through Laredo, Texas, to go up to Mount Shasta to discover what they didn't find on their first trip in 1904.
Right, that pretty much correlates it.
Mm-hmm. So once I was able to establish that, I was able to, okay, now I've got the individual, I've tracked his movements, I was able to track him coming in through Laredo, Texas border about 11 to 13 times within the years 1904 to 1938. Now the interesting thing in the legend is he claimed that, they asked him, why did you not come forward? You've got 30 years. Why'd you wait 30 years?
That's a big secret to keep for 30 years.
Well, I discovered what the answer was. In the actual 1934 Stockton newspaper article, J.C. Brown claimed that during his trips up to Mount Shasta, he was kidnapped. Now, he made it appear in the article to sound like there were government agents, U.S., United States agents, who had kidnapped him, and he barely escaped with his life. One of the interesting things, he said that after he retired, he wanted to wait until he retired from the Lord Cowdrey Company before he came back to claim the fine. But he said that when he told his family members that he was going to go back after retired, they wanted to come back with him up to the mountain. But what happened was, interesting, and this is in the 1934 Stockton Record article, that his family members began to die mysteriously.
Oh, no.
And he also went on to say that he also got into an accident, some sort of an accident.
That may have been on purpose, huh? Like a car accident, you mean? Or?
Quite possibly.
Okay.
So he was kind of telling the people at the 6 weeks at John Root's home, there's a lot of reasons why you don't really go public. But what he did say to them is that, I am a rich man. I'm already worth $40 million.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't doing it for the money.
No.
So, and then thereafter, as I said, he disappeared. So when I was able to figure out these clues, I was then able to tie in who J.C. Brown really was.
Okay. Now, to me, it would seem if you're going down 11 miles underground, you're not going to go alone. You're going to take a group.
Exactly.
It's going to take a while, maybe even a couple days, to get down there.
They were down there at least probably a week each time. On his second trip, we actually found that he probably was down there for at least a week.
So you have names of these other engineers. Is there any way to track them down or their families?
Sure.
And what's happened with that?
I haven't got that far with that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been busy doing
J.C.
other things.
Brown.
But I've gotten to the point where I've got their names here and their associations tied in with J.B. Body. I mean, J.B. Body, I've even got his memoirs, because once I discovered who he was, I went to the Library for Civil Engineers in New York, and I have a picture in front of me of J.B. Body. So I have an actual picture of the man, of the legend.
Okay.
And I have his memoirs, which were found in the memoirs for all civil engineers, and his full name is John Benjamin Body.
Did he mention the Mount Shasta treasures?
No, he does not.
Really? No clue in there?
No. Not within the memoirs. They talk about his accomplishments, what he did while working for the Lord Cowdray Mining Company. A very highly decorated engineer. He was instrumental for building the Trans-Isthmian Railroad at Tijuana, Tepec in Mexico, which came 12 years before the Panama Canal, and it connected the Gulf Coast of Mexico to the Pacific Coast, and whereby goods can come from China across and go out to the United States. And so the United States was trying to get this treaty with Mexico in place, and J.B. Body, being he spoke Spanish, he was the interpreter for Lord Cowdray, and they were able to get the account or the contract. And under my Americans like J.P. Morgan, who was trying at the time to get the contract for the Americans, and This is a very, very prominent individual we're talking about as well.
Right. In other words, for 30 years, he was an actual engineer. He was not a charlatan running around the country telling people where to find lost treasure.
Exactly. This was something that was a sidebar thing for him. He was involved with the Mexican Eagle Oil Company, which became, I believe today, is part of Shell Oil.
Right. Now, did most of his relatives die mysteriously so that you weren't able to track any of them, or did some were some able to live and, you know, are they still around?
Well, in his memoirs, he was his wife Mary Hammer was still alive, and then he had a daughter, Patrice Milson Kelton, who survived him.
Okay.
When he died, he died in Scotland. If his family was if I was able to track them now, I would have to go to Scotland or England to find his descendants. So.
Right, and this is common when I study kind of conspiracies, as you'll hear about family members dying. And then that just kind of stops it, you know, the person revealing information.
Well, that is very true. I mean, there are a lot of things right now that once, you know, the information is out there, people have to be very careful for their own longevity of life, because everything is either made to look like an accident or made to discredit someone. So those are the two routes that they usually go to keep things a secret.
Right. Now, I understand you're heading down that way, too. Do you have any sense of where this lost cave is, where this treasure may be?
Well, yes and no. I will tell you that after I discovered who the man was and I found his photo, I started to... I was writing the screenplay for the movie. And as I got to the part of the movie where I had to figure out how J.B. Body actually did it, how he traveled, what he did. I was able to discover that once he came through Laredo, Texas, that they took the railroad all the way up to Mount Shasta. I was able to determine what town he got off in, what railroad town. And as I learned more and more, I was able to do remote viewing, and I believe I do know where I could find the entrance to this tunnel.
Interesting. So you study remote viewing?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Now, where this gets more interesting is that once I got off the air doing the show with Coast to Coast, I was contacted by someone who lives up in the Pacific Northwest. And as a result of our communications, I'm up here now, we're speaking, and I had been introduced to some tribal members from different tribes up here, which I will leave what tribes that they are right now. I won't divulge that right now, but what I will tell you is what I've learned is that The road that I'm on, there's no coincidences in life, Michael. And what I've learned is that I've learned firsthand from the Nisqually elders, one of the tribes up here, that Bigfoot does exist, that the tall ones that are referred to by the Indians are the Lemurians, who are there just from their descendants who are still around today.
Right, and they may reveal themselves a bit more to the Indians, who might be a little more friendly toward them?
Yes.
Okay, and what do they look like?
They stand 8 to 10 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
They have long, dark hair. They look like Indians. They wear buckskin clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out at night. They don't come out during the day. They will come out at night.
I see, around Mount Shasta.
Yes, and up in the northwest here in the Olympia or the Seattle area, where there's a lot of tribes up here, they will come out on the reservations.
Now, in my research, you're going to love this. I found in small towns around Shasta, once in a while, a tall person wearing a white robe would come in and buy some goods and services.
That is true.
Pay with a hunk of gold and not ask for change, just walk out the door. Is that true? You've heard that too?
Yes.
Amazing. What have you heard about that?
Well, I've heard that they haven't done it recently, but in the last 30 years, they've been known to come up to Mount Shasta and do that. And they definitely stick out because you don't see people, you know, that tall, you know.
No.
In our civilization.
Well, I would encourage you when you go down there to talk to people in the New Age community, because I've talked to a few of them, and they will tell you stories if you gain their trust about some of this information.
Well, speaking of gain your trust, as I got out here, I learned from one of the Nisqually tribe elders about the Bigfoot and also the tall ones, and that what he does is he leaves out tobacco and certain food on his property.
Mm-hmm.
And the tobacco is in respect for the tall ones and Bigfoot and the food, and sort of tell me what foods that they like. But when he goes back, the food's gone and the tobacco's gone.
Right. So what kind of information have these tall ones imparted to the Indians?
Well, that I haven't been privy to, because I just got here a couple days ago, and I've just been taken in confidence from some of these tribes. So I think in the coming months I will learn quite a bit, but I am sharing with you what I've learned in a short period of time. I was invited yesterday to a tribal ceremonial. It's called a sweat, and it's done in an inipi.
Mm-hmm.
And an inipi looks like a teepee.
Okay.
Looks like a dome teepee. And what they do is they put hot lava rocks inside of it, and they're poured into a pit. And you sit around the pit, and once inside the pit, they close the opening to the teepee where you come in, and it probably gets to be about 250 to 300 degrees inside of this inipi.
Wow.
While we're in there last night, the Indians go through four rounds of ceremonial prayers. While the prayers are going on, Indian songs are sung, and someone plays a drum at the same time. So this is the ceremonial things that you only hear about, you see part of it in movies that I was privy to last night.
Okay.
During the course of these four rounds, each round signifies a different part of the ceremonial prayer meeting. But in one of the rounds, one of the Indians mentioned the Bigfoot and how Bigfoot should be protected, because Bigfoot's been coming out a lot on one of the properties, and he was asking the spirits to give protection to Bigfoot because he's still a seeker for the most part in our civilization. So
yeah.
His fear is that our culture would harm this magnificent creature.
I see. So in the New Age community, there's a reference to Telos, which is an underground city below Mount Shasta, and I believe it's said to be 11 miles down.
The Argathian people, yes, have the city of Telos, and this is in the area that J.C. Brown claimed he had found the Lemurian people.
Now, who are the Argathians?
They are who... that is the city that was built by the Lemurians, and these people are from Lemuria.
Argatha is the channeler, or
well, that is the name of their civilization.
So what you're saying is J.C. Brown may have found Telos.
He did find Telos.
Oh, it is Telos. Okay. All right. And this is, I've heard of Telos for years and years and years. You know, it's this mystical city, and supposedly below Mount Shasta.
This is correct.
Okay. And my understanding is they had a way of growing crops down there, too, underground, and growing their food. Did he mention anything about that?
No, not in my research as of yet. What I found basically is what I've just discussed, and he probably knew more, but I think because of him worrying about his life, he didn't come forward with everything he could have during the 6 weeks that he was there at John C. Ruth's home.
Okay, so let's talk about the Rosicrucians now. This is a mystical group. My understanding is they also have a lot of knowledge about this subject?
Yes, they do. The Rosicrucians, from my research, is that goes back to the ancient world, and they go back as far as 1500 BC in the Egyptian culture. And it's a mystery that thousands of years, it's in the ancient Egypt, there were schools there, bodies of schools were formed, and they were exploring the mysteries of life to learn the secrets of the hidden wisdom.
Sure. And, by the way, a lot of Freemasons are Rosicrucians.
Exactly. At the early European beginnings, you can take it back to 742, there's a man by the name of Arnaud. He was a French philosopher, and he introduced the mystical teachings into France. And then from there, it spread to much of the Western civilization. Pretty much the symbolism in that system was known as the Kabbalah and the rituals of the Order of the Brotherhood. Or the knighthood, actually.
Okay. So what type of information do the Rosicrucians have about Lemuria and Mount Shasta?
Well, they believe that it goes back to the I Am One, or the mystical side of spirituality. That you can manifest whatever it is you want by using the mind's eye.
I see.
And I believe it's all tapped through the pineal gland, which we all have in our brains. And nobody knows, the scientists don't know the reason for it, but I believe that opens up the spiritual side to where we really come from.
Right. So why don't you give out your website and info so people can dig into the mystery of J.C. Brown right now?
Well, the website is www.freewebs.com/, and my full name, Stephen Sindoni, Sindoni. You can also go to Google and just Google my name, Stephen Sindoni, and it'll bring you to either my website, or it'll bring you to YouTube, and you can listen to my interviews that I've done so far on this topic.
Right. Now, if anyone's interested in perhaps going on this journey with you, are you forming a group as well?
Yes, I am forming a group. I can be reached at my email address.
Go ahead.
And it's Sindoni Says, Sindoni Says, at hotmail.com.
Great. So people may be able to find this lost treasure.
That is correct. I will be going later this month. I'll be paddling on an Indian canoe journey with, it'll be called a Lummi canoe journey up to Canada, British Columbia. But thereafter, at the end of the month, I'll be going to Mount Rainier with other Native American elders who've told me about Bigfoot. And then I'm working my way down to Mount Shasta the end of July. So this will be my expedition to Shasta will be at the end of the month to find the entrance to the tunnel.
Now, who owns this land?
The land is right now, it's I'm not really sure, but I know they use the top of it for a ski resort. Anybody can go there on the Mount Shasta.
Okay, so probably U.S. Like national park land?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, great. So any other aspect of this whole mystery I've left out?
No, you've covered
it. Attacked from every angle.
You've covered every angle. What I'd like to see happen, I'd like to see the expedition happen and to find this. But I would also like to see this Indiana Jones-type movie made. I've already written the screenplay. So I encourage anyone who wants to make this movie to contact me. I believe this movie needs to be made. And I do believe that the ancient mysteries need to be revealed, and the Indians, I mean, this is the best-kept secret in America.
It really is, and you know, when the new Indiana Jones movie came out about crystal skulls, it really introduced everyone to this very esoteric topic. The crystal skulls are real. You know, they're all around the world.
That is exactly right.
And a fictional movie can shine light on these subjects.
Well, you know, Hollywood usually gives you a glimpse of what's really going on.
Yes.
And they tell you without telling you because there are people out there who don't want the truth to be told.
The Matrix.
And the Matrix, exactly right. And the bigger the lie, the easier for people to believe.
It's like Men in Black, or there's so many films where they just give you a taste.
Well, that's exactly right. I can tell you this, from whence I started this journey, I've now had to worry about people following me. And
really?
Yes. What I'm telling you now, I found out that there are people who don't want this to be made public. So I have to look both ways when I cross the street, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Which is okay, because, you know, the truth will set you free.
Right. Now, did this occur after you were on the George Norrie show?
Yes.
Because that was pretty massive exposure on, what, 400 radio stations or something?
Right after the George Norrie show was interesting. What happened was I had my modem crash 3 times.
Wow.
My phone was tapped, and then I started being visited by... I'd be walking down the street in New York and have Black Ops helicopters above me.
Interesting.
Which I found very interesting. And then I would get on the train a couple of times, and I would know that I would be being watched and stuff. And I'd say, you know, this is interesting, all because of what I found out. But I think what really was the key in all this was when I talked about the connection to the Native American and made the point on the George Norrie broadcast, and I was pretty much cut off prematurely at that point, but the point that I made was, in my research in the New York Public Library after finding out the legend, I looked into as to why J.C. Brown or J.B. Body would not want to come public, and
sure.
What I was getting, and I don't know where I was getting it, but I was getting to go in the direction of look into all the treaties in the United States. And I looked at the Shasta Indians in that area. I said, well, you know, how many were there? And then I came upon the Treaty of 18, the Massacre of 1851. And you can Google this. It's out there. And when I talked about this on George Norrie broadcast, all of a sudden I was, I thought, prematurely cut off. But basically what I was talking about was that in 1851, Colonel Reddick McKee had a signing, treaty signing with 3,000 Indian braves in the area, and this is Mount Shasta and other tribes in the area. And after the treaty signing, 3,000 braves were poisoned with strychnine in the beef and the bread, and
terrible.
And then there were only 27 Indians left, and those people put on reservations thereafter. Which is interesting is that then I went to read some of the treaties, the first treaties in the United States in 1854, and they talked about each Indian would get $2,000 once they signed over their property, you know, to the government. So the other day I was talking to one of the Indians here, and they were telling me that if you're a full-blooded Indian, you'll get $2,000 a month from the government.
Mm-hmm.
So just what I learned in the 1854 treaties is true today, what the Indians are actually getting their allotment, or what's really happening on the reservations. So that's when you start to realize, Michael, that, you know, knowledge is power, and, you know, when you're able to figure things out, there are people out there, you know, who then lose control, and they can't have that in this paradigm that we live in.
Right. You've punched a hole in the matrix, and there's all kinds of holes. If you listen to our network, we go through many different angles, and you've just punched one. Now, I want to mention to you, are you familiar with the research of an Egyptian tomb found in the Grand Canyon?
I am not, no.
Because you may also want to look into this. It may tie in. The Arizona Republic newspaper reported with the Smithsonian Museum an Egyptian tomb with treasures and pottery and urns back in the early 1900s, around the time of J.C. Brown. So to this day, if you go to the Grand Canyon, there's areas called the Statue of Isis and Osiris, and there's monuments named after Egyptian gods. And that's the area where this tomb was found. So it kind of ties into what you're saying.
Well, if these things are all true, then you have to realize that there are people that are out there who do not want ancient history revealed. There are people that I know that are teachers, and they can't teach, you know, ancient history, or they have to teach curriculum the way they want. I mean, our school systems are such that the people in school are taught to a fifth grade level education, and that's for a reason. That's by design. They do not want the truth to go out there.
You got to find out on your own.
That is basically it. To know thyself. And there's one thing I say to people. I said, believe 50% of what you hear, and then investigate the other 50%. To learn the truth.
Right. Well, what I'd like to do is have you back in a few months, because I get the sense you're on this mystical journey and you're finding out more information as you go. So I'd like you to call me back in a few months and get an update. So I'm going to let you go now, but one more time, give out the info if people want to join your group to go to Mount Shasta to search for this lost treasure.
Well, there's two places they can go. They can go to www.freewebs.com. /STEPHENSINDONI, or you can go to my www.giveacrat website. That's GIVEACRAT.com. And that is basically a Change America website. It's called GiveACrat, CRAT. Instead of Democrat, it's GiveACrat.com.
Uh-huh.
And on that site, based on my, I believe my freedom of speech being cut short because of what I mentioned earlier, I decided to come up with a GiveACrat website, because when people are tired of the Republican and the Democrat, and they'll have none of that, then they need a new third party called GiveACrat. But my idea was, Michael, was to give America what they haven't been getting, the truth. So I want to be able to, whatever it is, whatever area, you know, I've become an investigator of some sorts, and people now are giving me information.
Needs in other areas.
Yes, and what I've learned is that now people are not afraid to come forward. And for whatever the reason, I've become the conduit for that.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you being on the show today, and we will check out your information, and let's get an update in a few months. Okay, Stephen?
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you
for having me.
I'm going to have you hang up to clear the line, and have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Stephen Sindone, the legend of J.C. Brown, talks about a engineer who went 11 miles below Mount Shasta and found mummies and Egyptian tomb types of and tablets with hieroglyphics, and it was quite an interesting interview, and he found like a village down there. So please check into that story. And I'm going to actually add a story to that right now about a place called Cocoa Weef. I'm going to spell this for you. K-O-K-O-W-E-E-F. And I grew up in the Los Angeles area, and I had always heard about this place. It's a mystical underground river of gold that was found in the California desert. And I'll read you a little bit of something I found on the web just to whet your interest, and you may want to look into this mystery as well. So it's called A Bit of History of the Lost River of Gold at Cocoa Weef, once again in the Mojave Desert of California. This is the story of a lost river of gold located near the California and Nevada state line, just off the 15 Interstate Highway. The mountains of this area are honeycombed with caves, and it is one of these caves that three Indian brothers supposedly found the lost river of gold, and one brother was killed while exploring them. They were friends of a local prospector named Earl Dorr, that's D-O-R-R, and told him the location of one of the entrances to the cave. Dorr located the entrance and explored the cave deep within the Cocoa Weef Peak. In 1934, Dorr tried to interest investors in the possibility of mining the caverns he said he had found. He described a cavern 3,000 feet deep and of an unknown length. There was an underground river running through the cave. That's where the whole river of gold comes from, this underground river. And just so people know, the Mojave River does go underground at some points as well. It's a very unusual and unique river in the Mojave Desert. So Dorr said he followed the river for approximately 8 miles, walking along a shelf next to the underground river. At some point, he said he saw a shaft of light, but otherwise the cavern was dark. The light that Dorr saw in the distance of approximately 8 miles are significant. On one of the shelves, Dorr filled a leather pouch with black sand to have analyzed for possible minerals. When Dorr made his way back to the top, he noticed two prospectors were watching him. Worrying about claim jumpers, he returned to the entrance and dynamited the entrance closed. Dorr spent most of his remaining years trying to locate the shaft of light that he had seen while following the underground river. He was never able to find the second entrance. The remains of the original entrance, Dorr's cabin, and smaller caverns can still be located in this area. Dorr had the pouch of black sand assayed, and it ran to $2,000 a ton of gold, and that was priced at $20 an ounce back then. At today's prices of $800 for an ounce, this would come to over $80,000. So not bad for a day's work. So here's what is little known about prospecting trips by some desert explorers in later years, which might provide clues to relocating the lost treasure. First off, Dorr said he descended about 2,000 feet to the bottom of the main cavern. And then he walked a distance of about 8 miles along the riverbed. This distance along the depths would mean that the shaft of light that Dorr said he saw while exploring would be located somewhere out on the lower reaches or badlands below the peak and to the west of Coco Weef. So according to a local prospector, Dorr spent much of his time in these lower areas searching for the shaft of light. So this is something that you may want to explore on your own. It's spelled in two ways, Coco Weef with an F and Coco Weep with a P. And you can look this up in the Mojave Desert. It's a very remote area of eastern California. There's a ghost town called Sima, which is a pretty interesting little place. I think there's a little hotel there and used to be a train station. But when the train closed down, it shut down Sima, C-I-M-A. So if you can locate the Sima Road, and you can see Coco Weef on the map, and check that out, as well as this lost cave of treasures in Mount Shasta, if you are interested in a mystery and a treasure hunt. So we have about 10 minutes left, and what I'm going to do is talk to you a little bit about, we touched on during the interview how to get through the matrix and find out the real news, what's really happening on this earth. Personally, myself, I don't believe I have watched like network news in about probably 7 years, actually. You would think, oh, Mike must be completely uninformed. And I don't listen to the Associated Press news bulletins on the news either. Associated Press, you know, you have to look into who owns the Associated Press. Who owns UPI, United Press International? What is their agenda? What are they allowing to come through, and what are they censoring? And until we have a true investigation of these organizations, I'm not interested in the AP News or the UPI News. To me, it's filtered. So what I've done for the past 7 years is I've gone on alternative sites on the web and been able to get unfiltered news outside the matrix. And I'll give you a few of them now. For information coming out of Washington, D.C., the best researcher and reporter out there is Webster Tarpley, T-A-R-P-L-E-Y. He's an extremely knowledgeable man, and he's got a radio program on GCN Live. That's Genesis Communications Network, GCNLive.com. And they rerun his show all week, so it doesn't matter what time you click it on. You can hear his show, Webster Tarpley. And he's got an excellent new book out on Obama, really kind of going through Obama's past and his connections to the Trilateral Commission and through Brzezinski and the Council on Foreign Relations. And the CFR, just so you know, is dedicated to a one-world government, to a new world order. That's what they want. That's what they have been working on for decades. They used to be called the League of Nations, and these groups change names through the decades as they get publicity sometimes. But the CFR is a private organization of 4,000 members, and a lot of media people are in there. Tom Brokaw, Ted Koppel, Barbara Walters, Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer. A lot of political giants are in this group, Colin Powell, people that ran for president like Gary Hart, Condi Rice is in there, the Bushes, etc. So it's important to find out everything you can about the CFR, and Webster Tarpley is the guy, and he's written an incredible book called Synthetic Terror. And I highly recommend that you read Synthetic Terror. It gets into the 911 and what really actually happened that day and how the media really didn't tell us the real story at all about 911, what actually happened. And so he's the first person I would mention if you really want to break through the matrix and find out the real news coming out of Washington is just listen to Webster Tarpley's show, read his books, and you'll get behind the scenes. You'll get backstage and find out what's going on. Jim Mars is great. That's with two R's, J-I-M-M-A-R-R-S, jimmars.com. He wrote an incredible book about the Kennedy assassination. It sold, I think, 5 million copies, called Crossfire. And I think most Americans today don't believe it was one person. They believe there was a whole group behind it. And he really uncovers this. And then he gets into Rule by Secrecy, which is probably the best book I've ever read in my life. I mean, Rule by Secrecy ties it all together, all of the ancient mysteries that I talk about. And, of course, I produce films on ancient mysteries. And go to my webpage on BBS Radio and click it on and listen to my archives. And please order my DVDs. I get into these ancient mystery schools and all of these strange monuments all across the globe, everything from Easter Island to Stonehenge. And please purchase my DVDs at $20, and there's lots of great pictures in my lecture. And that's what supports my show. That's what keeps it all going, so I can continue to do research. Please support all of us, Stephen and his works, and Webster Tarpley and myself, in this alternative news medium. So anyway, Jim Mars is a fantastic researcher. If there's one book I could recommend to people, it would be Rule by Secrecy, in addition to Webster Tarpley's Synthetic Terror. These are really excellent exposés and help you understand what's really going on in the planet and politics and sociology. So jimmars.com is an excellent site, and Jeff Rentz is probably my favorite reporter. I believe at one time he did work for the networks, NBC or ABC, and he dropped out when he realized that the stories were being filtered or censored. And Jeff Rentz, that's R-E-N-S-E.com, it's simply Rentz.com, R-E-N-S-E.com, has, probably about 20 stories a day that come up on his site, and you just scroll through his headlines and click on the one that interests you, and you choose the news you want to read. You don't wait for the AP to tell you, you know, or listen to a 30-minute broadcast on ABC and wait for them to tell you in order. You know, you choose. You take the power. You pick which one you want to read. And Rentz will definitely open your eyes. It's free online. David Icke has excellent headlines every single day. No, he doesn't talk about aliens all the time. I'd say 95% of his stories, or 99%, are just about politics and what's going on in society today. He's tracking the New World Order probably better than any researcher. So, you know, the alien stuff I kind of put in a separate category in his theories. I'm kind of neutral on his theories. I don't believe or disbelieve. I just know that he does excellent research into genealogies, and he's done great research into how the Bushes and the Clintons are, all of these people, John Kerry and Al Gore and Colin Powell, and all of them are actually related. And so if you're interested in this subject, please go to davidicke.com, I-C-K-E, davidicke.com. And every day he has great headlines, probably once again about 20 headlines, and you pick which one you want to read and explore for that day. And get into your own unfiltered news. And Alex Jones is the other one I'll mention real briefly. He kind of became famous when he broke into Bohemian Grove, which is a private campground in Northern California, where a lot of these elite media and political figures were engaging in kind of weird occult or pagan rituals. In the forest of Northern California, it's in a town called Monte Rio. He was able to sneak in, and he videotaped the ceremonies of them dressing all in black robes and worshiping this pagan stone owl, this giant owl about 40 feet high, and these weird ceremonies. And once he had the tape, he was able to prove that this was really going on. This was not wild conspiracy. So, it's important to watch this tape and show it to others. And Alex Jones, you can either Google his name or Yahoo his name, and All of his films are free, by the way. Just go to Google or Yahoo, and you can watch them right now. Watch his films for free. And or go to his site, which is Infowars.com. Infowars.com. So, of course, BBS Radio has some good news site here as well. So if you go to our website here, if you go to Alex Jones' site, Webster Tarpley's, Jeff Rentz, and David Icke, to me, those are kind of the four giants. I don't believe, you know, every single thing they say. You know, I don't. We each have our own free will, and but I agree with a lot of what they have to say. And so, please, you know, instead of just passively letting the news wash over you each day, and even when you're driving, listening to all those news bulletins, don't be afraid to turn it off. And just go on the net, you know, once a day and pick and choose your own stories. And I've given you a good head start. This broadcast will go into the archive, of course. So there's a lot of good info today. So just listen to it again in the archive and take notes and write down what I've said. And this will give you a good start. If you don't like something, then cross it off your list. But at least try it. At least try the information I've given you today. So we're winding down on Odyssey. And we're broadcasting every other week at this point, and I really appreciate bringing you all of these mysteries from around the globe. Once again, my my films, the first one, The Sands of Time, I get into the whole Chariots of the Gods material, ancient astronaut theory. Second film, Temples of Stone, and that gets into Yanaguni and Angkor Wat and some esoteric areas in the Far East, ancient monuments and temples around the globe. And who may have built them and why they were built and our heritage and our history on this planet. And my new film is Mystery Islands. It's not on the website yet, but just email me and I'll shoot it out to you for $20. It's my latest one on Nan Madal and Oak Island and all of these mystical sites around the globe. So please do support the show, and I will I'm using PayPal. That's my secure server. And shoot me out $20 and I will send you this film. So we're all out of time. Thank you for joining me on Odyssey today, and I will see you next time. Take care. Good night.